Hello, I'm Matt Peterson.
And I'm Rich Trippier.
And this is episode 58 of History on the Table. Rich?
I tried to think of something cool for 58 and I'm coming up blank.
Oh, sure. It's fine. Our brackets are busted. Although, as a Mizzou fan, I don't know what bracket you were concerned with.
Man, can you believe that? Did not win a single conference game all year. And last year, I mean, they were like in the second round of the tournament, I think. So, wow. But in the end, I don't really care that much. So I'm not going to worry about it.
Well, you always have hockey, right?
That's right. And the Blues are, they're going to be like 1 point out of the playoffs. I just know they are.
I think they're like five or six back.
Yeah. Yeah, tonight they're playing San Jose, I think. So that should be 2 points. But who knows?
Well, we've hit our quota of sports talk, at least this early in the show. We could always talk more in the end. How you been, buddy?
I have been really good. Yeah, things are going well. So I'm happy. I've been playing some games, having some fun, doing a lot of singing. Everything's going well.
Love to hear it. It has been crazy busy here. So you will be doing most of the what have we been playing and that type of stuff. But
I can handle that.
Good. Good. Any other business before we get going?
I guess we could talk about Historic Fest.
Historic Fest, August 17th to the 20th.
Yeah, I think it's officially spring now. So it is in the next season.
Yeah, that's right. Time to sign up, folks. I will. We'll kick up the effort now that it's getting closer. We're almost through what is the craziest work time for me, and then really once that work period's done, then it's full steam ahead on Historic Fest. I can't wait. It's been a month since we've had time to sit on the change to the Every War Game Ever list for a month now. How are you feeling about it?
I'm okay with it. It was fun watching the discussion on Discord. So it's always good. I like to see what people think about, not just about the episode, but you know what we thought about, and see the surprise. And there was a little bit of controversy. I figure we're going to spend a couple hours tonight talking about what it is and is not a war game.
Yep.
But other than that, we can just say that the Oracle has spoken. And
whoa. We possess no Oracle and make no claims of possessing an Oracle.
We have what? Clay that forms itself, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But we have no Oracle. We make no claims of having an Oracle. Right. I don't want to get sued. Well, good. Let's get into it. So, Rich, how was your March? What did you play? Anything new?
It was good.
Anything exciting?
I didn't play a whole lot of games. I actually played some more family games. We had some good family gaming time, but I won't talk about that. But I'm really super excited because I finally got to play a game that I've been wanting to play for, literally years, and that game is Virgin Queen.
Hmm.
So we talk about Here I Stand all the time, and Virgin Queen is, I guess you would call it a sequel to Here I Stand. I mean, it's the same designer, very similar mechanics, although it's not exactly the same. And it takes place right after the time of Here I Stand. It's another card-driven game. It might as well be called a sequel. That's basically what it is. So I enjoyed it quite a bit. The powers are mostly the same, a little bit different. It felt weird because just as a sort of random draw, I got picked to play the Holy Roman Empire. And if you've played the Habsburgs in Here I Stand, it's wildly different. Spain is basically the new Habsburgs. Holy Roman Empire really feels more like playing France. Because you get to sponsor a lot of scientists and artists and things like that. So had a great time. We played all day. And there's a kind of cool mechanic where the Holy Roman Empire gets to pick or gets to guess who's going to win the religious battle, basically. And then you sort of hold on to that pick. So you've got some hidden victory points depending on who's winning the battle when you declare them. And those victory points, I actually ended up winning the game at the very end. I didn't even realize that I had won until we counted those points up. So it was kind of cool.
Oh, so it's the best game ever. Like if you win.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like when I played it, my first 18XX game, I won it and I should have just retired right then. Because I don't think I've won a game since then.
Very good. I did play one thing, and just so I talk about something this week, I played a little game called Battle of Mackinac Island. I haven't talked about this, right?
I know about it, and I can't remember if you talked about it on the show, or maybe we talked about it at Lake Viking or something. I can't remember.
You know what? Maybe I talked about it last month. I talked about it last month. I just pulled up the show notes. And I played it last month now that I look at my BGG profile. Yeah, I played a lot of Ticket to Ride, my first journey over the past month.
Nice.
So I'll let you go ahead and take the next
one. How old is your little, not your little one, but.
She's 4.
And she's playing Ticket to Ride now.
We don't.
Or is it just you and Kat?
The route scoring. No. No. My oldest, she's a huge fan of it. She loves that.
That's
and
awesome.
Parcheesi. We take out the, it's a race to who can lay down on the trains first.
Okay.
We don't do the, so in Ticket to Ride, my first journey, it's the first person to claim like 5 or 6 routes or whatever.
Okay.
And I don't mean to detour the whole episode this early on, but yeah, that's lots of family gaming just like you.
All right.
It's been one of those months. So why don't you take the next one?
We'll get back to war games and see if anyone says this one isn't a war game. So I just actually just set up this week and started playing a little bit solitaire. Operation Mercury, The Invasion of Crete. This is a GTS game. I'm going to be playing it at a con in about a month. It's a follow-up to a GTS game that we played this time last year. So we're just playing a different game in the series. And I just threw down. So obviously we all have different areas. It's a con game. So there's, 6, 7, 8 of us playing. But I threw down sort of the individual scenario that's for the part that I'm doing, just so I can kind of get a feel about what I'm doing. And I've been playing that this week. And it's great. I love it. It's so much fun. GTS is a good system.
Now I'm looking over my shelf and I'm thinking I should play the other Operation Mercury, which is Operation Mercury, the GMT game.
Yeah, yeah. That'd this is the cool. only Mercury Crete game I've ever played, so.
Okay, nice. That is my only GTS experience. And it was phenomenal, as I've said before, but
yeah.
never a deep enough dive. So I'll be interested to hear your thoughts after the con of what you think after spending a whole, 5 days playing it nonstop.
Yeah.
That'll be
I'm looking
awesome.
Forward to it. Todd and I played a little bit last year after we played the Normandy game, and I haven't really played it since then until this week, but I think Todd and I are sitting across the table from each other again, so we'll see how it goes.
Very good. And you know what? Todd's a great guy. I think we should mention, if you're into plays of board games or anything like that, he's been doing a dive into ASL Starter Kit. He's done lots and lots of miniatures and all kinds of different plays all along YouTube, different series. You should check out Wardrobe Plays World War II. Wardrobe, like wardrobe, but war robe with a D in there. Wardrobe Plays World War II.
Yeah.
Definitely worth checking out.
It is a good channel, yeah. And I think Todd and I are going to play some ASL this summer, too.
Awesome. Good. Yeah. Okay. Anything else?
That's it as far as games. It's just like I said, no family stuff, but
sure. Well, I've already checked in. So what about books? Now I've read a ton, but of course, just like my other stuff, none of it really topical, but go ahead.
Yeah. Only one that was topical. The book my wife and I were reading together is, well, it's historical, isn't it? The Silmarillion. That counts.
Oh, you're not reading Crete?
No, I am, but I'm saying that's the other book my wife and I are reading together.
Oh,
so,
okay.
No, on my own, though, I'm reading the Antony Beaver book, Crete 1941,
okay.
Which started off really slow. Like, the first few chapters, the pre-Crete stuff, it talked about, like, Germany invading, the mainland portion of Greece and some other stuff. And I don't know, for whatever reason, it was just kind of slow getting into it. But now that the Crete invasion has started, it's getting really good. So I'm super into it.
Yeah, my experience with Beaver on Crete was his like full World War II book. We've talked about it a lot as a recommended reading. And his little chapter or whatever on Crete was really fascinating. So I bet once, if like you said, that book is picked up, I bet it's good.
Yeah. Yeah, and sort of as an aside, I'm not reading this right now. I read it a long time ago, but I shouldn't even bring this up. But do you remember the book by the guy came out a few years ago? Those like talking about like the barefoot runners in Mexico.
Yeah, I do. Running book.
Yeah, did you?
It's longer than a few years ago, but yeah, go on.
Yeah, did you know that he had a follow up book about the resistance fighters in Crete, which is also an excellent book. So I might read that one again just because it was so good.
Wait.
Yeah.
I thought he had a book about biking.
Maybe he did, but he had a book about the resistance fighters in Crete and how those guys were basically in such amazing shape because they spent their whole lives like running up and down mountains.
Okay, so the book we're talking about is Born to Run.
Yes, that's the book Born to Run. Yep, that's
he goes and runs in Mexico with this tribe of runners that have this insane like stamina.
Yep.
Christopher McDougall, and yes, he has several books. And here you go. It's on my one to read. Yeah, Natural Born Heroes, How a Daring Band of Misfits Mastered the Lost in... No, that can't be it. Which are you sure about it? This?
No. But let me look it up. That's the time where we Google online. Let's see.
Okay, well, you look it up. I'm going to talk about something and give a little teaser, a little taste for next month. Because I fully embraced the fact that 2024, Richard... is going to be the year of U.S. Civil War gaming.
I'm all on board with that. There's lots of new games coming out.
Yes.
Yeah, Natural Born Heroes is it. And that is about the resistance fighters in Crete.
Had no idea.
Yeah, it's really good. You should read it.
I just assumed it was like about, I don't know, Sparta or something.
Nope.
Like, yeah. Something dumb like that. Like the 300, that's what I meant. Okay, interesting. So I checked out a book, and it'll be read by next month. Little jokes flying around about the greatest general of the American Civil War. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Well, if it's... Where,
it's George the Rock Thomas.
Okay.
So I picked up one of his biographies, which is a real shame because there's not enough written about George Thomas. And so by the end of the next month, I'll check in on George Henry Thomas is True as Steel by Brian Steele Wills. Because, and the reason I bring this up, is it's time for Hot-Blooded. The things we're horned up for, the things we're honking at the bit for, what's new, what are we can't wait to table or learn more about. And for me, this month is Rebel Fury.
All right.
Rebel Fury just showed up, of course. One of the newest releases from GMT Games. Maybe not the newest. I think something else just came out that they delayed. Anyways, it's Mark Herman's game, reinvented from the Gettysburg system. This is six battles on the U.S. Civil War. It's divisional scale. It's very light. The way I've described it a couple times is it's like a game of cat and mouse, but when you're the cat and when you're the mouse, just depends. It's really a kind of a bluffing game at times as well. It's a very fascinating game, and I've said that Waterloo Campaign is my favorite, and I think the best, like, small footprint, quick playing game. And so I'm very excited to see Rebel Fury. Of course, George Thomas has a counter in the game, which is why I'm reading that book, and that is what I cannot wait to table this month.
Awesome. Do you own it yet, or?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. Right away. I P500 this. Kind of a late, I gotta give credit to Joel Wilson on the History on the Table Discord server for kind of pushing me towards this and the We the People.
Yeah.
Reprint.
Well, I'm definitely interested in that one. I did not P500 it.
For the People. Sorry, For the People.
Yeah. And now that Miniature Market is closed, I'm doing a lot less just like wandering in and buying games just because I happen to see them on the shelves. So
So I assume that you haven't had a chance to play Waterloo 1815 on Rally of the Troops.
No, I have not.
Yeah, that's good, Rich.
I guess that's not fair to say. I've had the chance. I just haven't. Yeah, I haven't played that much. I don't think I've played anything around Rally of the Troops in a few months. I go to it every single day hoping that Plantagenet will be on there. but no, I haven't. Work has been busy, so it's been cutting down on my, like, during the day playtime. And then, yeah, I got to get back on and play something. I've really been itching to play something live with someone online. But it probably won't be next month either, so.
Well, next month for me, I'm hoping it's the opposite. So what about you, Rich? You hot-blooded training?
There's nothing I'm super hot-blooded about. I'm definitely interested in that. I think probably the closest thing I am to hot-blooded right now is it just got announced that GCACW is going to have a Siege of Vicksburg game.
Yeah.
And that was insta P500, or not P5, pre-order for me. So I am excited about that one. I'm excited about Rebel Fury as well. I want to have a chance to play that. But nothing that's just like, I'm, you know, tearing my face off to get a piece of.
Fair enough. If we tore our face off every month, we'd have no face left. So I appreciate your restraint, and I will definitely report back on Rebel Fury.
Excellent.
Rich, it's been a while. It's been a minute.
Yeah, has it been 2 months? Is that what we're doing? Did we not do one? I don't think we did one.
We didn't because we double dipped last month.
Yeah.
We're going to play a little game, Rich.
So, yeah, I mean, my last time, I just knocked it out of the park. Only one way I can do better than I did last time.
It's going to be impressive if you did it. Folks, we're talking about the board game game. It's the game of games. Here's how it works. Rich will get clues. Every clue he gets on a particular game, it's a war game, he loses points. So if he gets it on the first guess, he gets 10 points. If he gets it after one guess, he gets 9 points. You get how it works. You can play at home. Let us know how you did, and you get a good thumbs up. Rich, are you ready, sir?
I am ready. I've got my guess.
All right, what's your guess?
1914, Knock Paris.
Stop. No.
This You've game. Got to have two in case I accidentally guess one.
No, I learned my lesson 2 months ago. This game was designed by S. Craig Taylor.
Oh my gosh, that means nothing to me. Pass.
Fair enough. This game was released in 1977 originally.
Oh, you're killing
The
me
version
now.
You would be familiar with will be 1981's version.
I'm thinking of that fantasy war game, Wizard's Quest or something like that.
Good guess. No. Clue number 3. The artist is Roger McGowan.
Surprise, surprise. Squad leader is older than that, I think. So I'll say squad leader, but no, plus that's an MMP or gamer's game. So I don't know. I'll pass.
Interesting. Fourth clue. This was published by Avalon Hill.
Oh, all right. I didn't know Roger McGowan did Avalon Hill games.
So
Panzer.
It's not Panzer. This version, the version we're talking about is Avalon Hill's version, which again is the version you would know.
Panzer Grenadier.
No. Did you just double guess?
No, I just didn't finish my guess the first time.
Okay, clue number 5. This game is a naval and air combat game.
Oh, okay. 7th Fleet.
Nice. No, 7th Fleet is SPI.
Oh, okay.
No, it's Victory. I'm sorry. It's Victory Games.
That's right.
This game covers the battles of the Solomon Seas between the United States and Japan in 1942.
Flat Top.
You got it.
There we go. I love that game, by the way. I've been wanting to play that again.
Nice. I'm dead serious about the blind game on History on the Table. It's just a matter of having the time to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to play this game real bad.
There's been a couple times that I've started blind internet games, and it seems like they always get a lot of attention. Everybody wants to do it, and they fall apart. Like within 2 or 3 weeks, they always just fall apart. I don't know why. I don't know how to fix that. That's been my experience, though.
Yeah, I think you give people a few days. So Jeff, who ran the AAC Gunslinger game, just did a great job. I don't know why.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
That was amazing. Maybe the actions were a little easier than Flat Top. I'll find out. But it's just going to be like, if you don't do anything, then you sail forward or something. I don't know. Like, you're just going to have a default in there.
Yep.
If you don't do anything, you fire all of your ordnance in an easterly direction. Dependent, doesn't matter what's in front of you. You just fire it all.
Fire at the sun.
Yeah. Or if you didn't take any action, the, like, carrier, your friendly carrier that's 3 hexes away or something.
Yeah.
Friendly fire. Very good, Rich. Nicely done.
Thank you. What'd I get? Was it 4 or 5?
I think that was the 5th clue. Was the
All right, I'll take it.
Yeah, it's not bad. For I will admit, after 2 months was so easy, I really had to. Okay, well, very good. Now, folks, it is time for our featured game. Rich, you want to give it to us?
I will. So this is Norman Conquest's Men of Iron, Volume 5. Which, the most important thing you need to know about this game is this is the game that I got a 9 out of 10 on the War Game Game.
Yeah, that helps everyone.
But there are other things you might want to know about it. So,
you know what? That would maybe, you could say this was last month's War Game Game or something.
Yeah.
But we didn't get the clues that would tell them the information.
Yeah. Yeah. So now we can do it like it's a War Game Game. This is a game designed by Ralph Shelton, who owns the coolest shorts that anyone has ever seen. It's originally, the series design, Richard Berg, art by Charlie Keebler, who I know, Mike Lemick and Kurt Miller, who I'm not familiar with. So you'll have to throw them on a future War Game 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 to stump me. It is, of course, by GMT, and it just came out last year in 2023.
Very good. So let's paint the picture here. First off, we've talked about Men of Iron in the past. We'll give the full rundown again. I can't imagine this one's going to take very long just because we've talked about Men of Iron.
Yeah, and we talk about the Tri-Pack so much. I mean, we're both such big fans of the Tri-Pack that we talk about it. It feels like almost every month it comes up in conversation.
But it'll be a good refresher of the core rules. But so the tricky thing for me, and you correct me if I'm wrong, because this is, well, I don't really know if anyone knows a lot about this period in history just because there's so many unknowns. But the whole point of this game is it's a 200-year history. So whereas Men of Iron Tri-Pack was this nice linear flow, especially in the individual packets, right? Like Men of Iron or War of the Roses, it just flowed chronologically. Where here you might be fighting something in Yorkshire and then you're over here fighting in Italy like 200 years earlier or something like that. And the whole point is to illustrate and highlight these battles of the Norman Empire, which are really just like the descendants and follow-alongs and successors to the Normans who were Viking raiders.
Yeah.
And so you might be fighting as the Normans, you might be fighting as the Papal Army, you might be fighting as the King of Norway or any of those or combination of those. So it's a really interesting blend. I kind of liked that. I went in just assuming, you know, if Men of Iron Tri-Pack is my one experience with Men of Iron, I kind of went in like thinking this was going to be the story that these battles tell, and very few of these happen back to back.
There are at least
Stamford
a couple
Bridge
of them,
and
because
Hastings.
Fulford and Stamford Bridge are definitely basically,
and then Hastings after
Hastings,
that.
I remember we played Fulford and Stamford Bridge basically back to back. We're like, yeah, this battle was 5 days after the first one or something like that.
Right. So then, but then you get things like Battle of Lewes, which is 200 years later. Evesham, same thing. Or then going back all the way to
Italy.
There's
one all the way in Italy.
Within like 1000.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you'd really have to dive into the history of each battle. And there's a nice little blurb about each of them. But this is just not an area. I'm not going to like talk out my ass. Yeah, I thought it was interesting that they bounced around and they took this approach. I liked it. I'm a fan of that.
Yeah, me too. And obviously, I know we are always talking about the Tri-Pack, but this is basically the first of the three in the Tri-Pack. So the Tri-Pack is Men of Iron, Blood and Roses, and Infidel. So these are all going to be in the same time period as the first series or whatever you want to call it in the Tri-Pack.
Does that line up? Because, well, I guess so, because some of this is Plantagenet's fighting, right? I mean, it's...
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd have to look at the Tri-Pack, but like you said, this goes from like, I think like 1050 to 1250 or something like that. So, you know, Infidel is going to be sort of the middle, and then Blood and Roses is going to be much later. It's going to be like 14, 1500s or something like that.
Well, Men of Iron was 1300s. So
was it? Oh, okay.
Yeah, 1298 is the earliest battle in Men of Iron.
In the Tri-Pack, you mean?
So the first one in Men of Iron Tri-Pack is just called Men of Iron.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. I guess Longbow and Agincourt are in there as well, but those all... Yeah. Nope. Take that back. I walk all that back. The earliest in the Tri-Pack is Infidel. So all the Crusade
is it? Okay.
stuff,
I thought it was the other
yeah,
way around.
Is the same time period, but you're not getting a lot of crossover... Although, like, Plantagenet Crusades and all that stuff. Then you get Men of Iron. Then you get War of the Roses.
Okay. In any case,
Agincourt's on
this
Anyways,
one yeah. is Men of Iron.
The series is Men of Iron.
So what are the other games in the Men of Iron series? There's the Men of Iron Tri-Pack.
Men of Iron, Men of Iron game.
Which
Men
is
of Iron.
Blood and Roses. So.
Infidel and Men of Iron.
Yeah.
And then a little, like, one-shots.
Okay. And
there's
then.
There's Arquebus.
Arquebus. Okay, so that's the other one. And then this one is Norman Conquest. Gotcha.
Yes.
All right.
It is unrelated to Men of Iron, other than Men of Iron is descendants of some of these Norman families.
I did not know that.
Okay, yeah. Yes.
I guess I just assumed. You know, we played a lot of Men of Iron last year. I've played it a couple times since we reviewed it, but... It's been a little while, and I didn't actually get like the two games out to directly compare them.
Sure.
I played this one, you know, a decent amount over the last month.
Yeah. So, and then Men of Iron, Infidel, and Blood of Roses all existed on their own, and then they were repackaged in the tri-pack.
Yeah. And then, so I did notice the rule book for this one has like what do you want to call them? Game-specific rules or series-specific? The whole thing is a series, whatever you want to call it. It has like the specific rules for each era called out in the rules, like in different colors and everything. So even though this game doesn't have any, you know, Blood and Roses stuff, it's got that section of the rule book because it's a newer, updated rule book that'll say, hey, if you're playing Blood and Roses, you know, here's some additional rules for you.
Yeah, it's a series rule book, and it's just been updated and cleaned up for this version.
Yeah.
And so they're going to keep that consistent. And the rules differences in a lot of those games are pretty minor. If you play Norman Conquest as your introduction, because it's what's available, the tri-pack is amazing, but it's out of print. There's a P500 for it. And this is your introduction. There's not that much of a leap between Norman Conquest and the tri-pack. It's all very much a similar game. It's very light as well. As a whole, I think when we first talked about this game, if it's on the scale between Commands and Colors, Ancients, or SPQR, obviously Commands and Colors Medieval exists, but I haven't played that, it falls in between those two. It's more complex than kind of any of the Commands and Colors games, but it's not quite as fiddly and complex as something like Great Battles of History.
Yeah, agreed. My favorite thing, and whether you're my favorite game, anytime you set up one of these, so you set it up and whether it's like the smallest battle or the biggest battle, you're going to have just like lines of guys that are just lined up, like looking across the field at each other. And you might have some guys sort of in reserve. There's some scenarios where guys don't activate until like the third activation or something, but you've basically got two lines of guys staring at each other. And it just looks like a bunch of other games where they're just going to smash into each other. And they do that, but as soon as that happens, the lines are no longer lines, and that's when the game gets really fun. Because you have an opportunity to like do flanks and cut guys off, and you're trying to pick which activation is the most important to you, and you're making all these decisions based on the fractured state of the battlefield. And that's what I love about these games.
I agree with you. And so let's rewind just a little bit, give everyone a little taste. So this is a tactical scale set in, obviously, medieval period. We've covered that. And how the game typically works is you will activate a battle. You can think of a battle as almost like activating it.
A formation.
Yeah, just a formation, someone under the command of one leader. And that will activate all of those troops. And so you will move, and maybe you'll fire if you have longbowmen or something like that, with those units belonging to that formation, that battle. And then you will do shock combat, or maybe charge if they're mounted, that type of thing. And you do all the activations and you do all the combat. And I really like combat resolution in this game. It uses the matrix from Great Battles of History as well. You see it there, where basically you're comparing like a pikeman fighting against an axeman, and you see who has the upper hand, and that gives you a modifier. And then you kind of have to attack everything in front of you, so you're looking at positioning and all that stuff. But the kind of key, outside of battle resolution, the key element of Men of Iron is the continuation mechanic, where if I activate this battle and I'm all done, I can then roll to keep my turn moving. So if I do something with Duke of Normandy, I can do a continuation roll to keep going with Robert Bellamy or something like that, you know, whoever it is. And I roll, and then I can keep my turn going, keep my momentum going. But then there's also these little secret chits where the other player can kind of attempt to seize the initiative. And so this passing back and forth of the initiative is what gives Men of Iron its flavor. There's no real turn track or anything. There's some timed engagements, but usually
I've never had a game end on time. It just, you don't pass that much in this game, so.
Not on a, yes, I agree. Rex kind of tried it in the one in-person game of this I played, and like his army withdrew, fled from the battlefield way before we were close to time.
Yeah.
Which is, as Rich just alluded to, you're going to end the game in another way, which is once you've taken enough flight points, which is you take as individuals either retire or eliminated, you will start accumulating points depending on the type of unit that retreated, and you will start rolling dice and add those flight points to your roll. And once you cross a certain threshold, your side withdraws from the battle. You might plan on like a 3-hour game of Men of Iron or something like that, but it can end much earlier than that if your army decides to withdraw on both. like when I played Rex again, it was like his first one, he rolled a 9 and withdrew. And so that, I think I love that little bit of, you don't quite know how long the game is going to go. And so in between all of that, you're fighting, you're charging, you're outmaneuvering each other, you're moving around this battlefield in a very tactical deal, and your units will retreat and you'll rally them, and you have leaders, and leaders can die, and you have worse leaders come on. And then each scenario has their own specific rules, much like Commands and Colors or Great Battles of History or anything kind of like this. And it all comes together in a really nice, really approachable, very playable system. Did I miss anything or forget anything, Rich?
No, that's the basics of the mechanics. Like you talked about the matrix a little bit. So obviously there are different types of units in there. There's, there's pikemen and axemen and bowmen. There's different types of bowmen. And depending on the scenario, these even guys that can be on horses or unmounted off their horses, and they can start on their horses and you can knock them off their horses, you know, as a part of the combat mechanics. So there's lots of different types of units out there that, like you said, depending on how they line up on that matrix, you know, you may want to, go after a certain guy because you've got an advantage over him, that kind of thing. Like the bowmen are nice because, you know, get a ranged attack and they get a lot of sort of extra shots on enemy movement, depending on how they move. And even if they get shot at, they get to shoot back. But obviously they're terrible in melee combat. So once you get up to them, you know, they're pretty easy to overrun. So.
Yeah. And, you know, missile fire, any kind of longbowmen or anything like that are really strong, but missile fire alone isn't enough to win you the battle. Because you have to disrupt someone first before you start inflicting losses on them.
Yeah.
And so that's just like another little element. Like, yeah, it seems like bowmen are really strong, but you need to do it 2 turns in a row. And if you have your bowmen on the front lines, 2 turns may not be enough for them to kind of withdraw and cause the disorder before they get slaughtered.
Yeah.
One thing that you alluded to earlier is this kind of chaos that devolves on the battlefield, and one of the things that causes that is a continuation attack. So if you just smoke a guy on the battlefield, right, like you mow down this longbowman, your guys will just charge forward and then just attack whatever is in front of them, not just in advance after combat. They can get a continued attack, and it just, that's, I know we talked about this last time when we talked about Men of Iron, that chaos that it causes that you were just talking about, like, oh yeah, we smoked him. All right, everyone forward. And then you're just like, oh God, what have I done?
Yeah.
You're just like, I am now surrounded by 3 enemy units. It is amazing and I love it.
Yeah, one of the games I had with my daughter, she had a bunch of really successful attacks, but her attacks were so successful that her lines were completely broken. And I started, surrounding and picking off her attackers. And then you can get some huge bonuses if you're attacking from like 3 flanks. Sides and hitting their flanks and everything. And, they're basically helpless at that point. So, there's a problem with being too successful because it is hard to keep your lines as lines. And that's really important in this game, not only just for the flanking attacks, but also you alluded to it earlier. If someone can be attacked, they have to be attacked. So you can't just like double up on a guy and say, I'm ignoring this guy who's also in my front.
What I like, everything you just talked about, you're like flanks and attacking everyone in front of you. Is it, Men of Iron manages to pull all of that together without being over fiddly. I think Great Battles of History is tons of fun. It's too much fiddle for me. And without being too complex. Meaning, so then you can have things like the flight rule, where like if you're playing this big meaty game and then all of a sudden you're like, all right, my army's out of there. And then you're like, it's super crunchy, that feels worse. But if you're playing this thing that's light and fun, you have leaders dying and men just charging around all over the battlefield, I think that's an easier pill to swallow, and it just makes it for, it's like Flying Colors. It's like Battles of the American Revolution in my mind, where it's these midweight games that you're just playing to have a ton of fun with. And I think this is a very successful system as a whole. And
yeah. And combat is super simple. I mean, not in a bad way, but once you've done it, I'm going to say 4 or 5 times.
Yep.
It's 10 seconds of calculations. You know, you're looking at it and you're going, okay, +1 because of the matrix, -2 because your defense, +1 because I've got this, and +2, and that's it. Total yep. is -1. Roll one die. It's over.
Yep. You realize really quick after, like you said, 4 or 5 times of combat, and that you're set, because you just know what to identify. What are you looking at? Because a lot of times it's like, this is our third shock combat in a row of an attacking pike against, I don't know,
yeah,
knights or
against
something.
Against an axeman or whatever.
Right, you know, yeah,
it's gonna
you
be
name
plus
it.
One.
Yeah, you're like, okay, same thing. Nothing's. We're just on a different part of the battlefield. A big fan. I think this is, if you wanted an entry into Men of Iron, this serves that purpose very well. I don't know if you need, like, an entry, whereas you might need an introductory game to BCS or OCS or something like that. You don't need the quote-unquote entry game. This is great for it. I don't know if they're complaints or more of personal preference. What I love about the Men of Iron Tri-Pack, not the series, the specific collection of three games, Men of Iron Tri-Pack, is the variety in battles.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we're exactly on the same page.
Lewis, hands down, Battle of Lewis is my favorite in this box. And that's because Edward's son charges in and, or sorry, Henry's son, Edward, charges in and attacks the barons all by himself. And so the rest of the Norman army is back behind, the English army is back behind Edward. And so the battlefield is open. And what I'm leading to is there's opportunity for maneuver. The only other scenario in my opinion, that kind of got close is Stamford Bridge because of the presence of reinforcements. And what I'm getting to is all of these battles, you start about 4 hexes out, and then you just march forward and you fight. And there may be little tweaks here. There's some where like the Welsh are worthless and they'll run from the battle, and they're all fun. But it's lines crashing into each other. And one of my favorite stories of all time is playing Infidel and having Jason's army swing out and pull this like perfect hinge motion out of the castle. But he had to deploy to like have that option. And so some of this, I think, is just not having the history of some of these battles, just because there's so many unknowns from like the early stuff. Like, did the reinforcements even show up at Stamford Bridge? We don't really know. And then there's also someone where they talk about like they parlay. That might have been Stamford Bridge as well, where they parlay. And so everyone's already like in line. So there wasn't a lot of maneuvering before the battle even started. But my point is, a lot of these battles, you're lining up 4 hexes across from each other, and then you crash into each other. And that's fun, but my favorite Men of Iron stuff is where you deploy and maneuver around the entire battlefield.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably not fair to compare this game to the Tri-Pack, because it's...
No, it's not. No,
but
right.
That's the natural comparison that comes to mind.
Right.
So if you've played the Tri-Pack, this one's going to have less variety. Obviously, fewer battles, but fewer units as well. This one is... It's like almost all pikemen. You've got some axemen... Mm. You've got a few archers, a few crossbowmen.
Men of Men-at-Arms. You have the Men of Men-at-Arms, a lot of those.
Yeah, you have some, yeah, but yeah. Not as many. So compared to the Tri-Pack, you just don't have as many units, as many
sure.
setups. So yes, it's less than you get in the Tri-Pack. But that's an obvious statement, too.
Yeah, and they're all fun. But honestly, I probably can't tell you much of a difference between Fulford and Hastings, other than
yeah.
Hastings is the one I played with Rex. You know, like, you're lined up and you crash into each other and you see what happens, and it's fun and it's bloody and you're chucking dice, and that's great.
Yeah,
I just want the deploy.
And
know?
I will say, because of the continuations more than anything, you can play the same battle 5 times
Absolutely.
In a row and it's going to be different every time.
You're 100% right. It's just, I want more sometimes.
Yeah, the terrain is mostly uninteresting to me.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of, you know, obstacles to go around, or it's, you know, they're mostly just like lining up in the plains. You might have some terrain sort of at the borders, but it's got a well-defined battlefield with mostly clear terrain most of the time.
Which, again, I just have to assume is because of the times, right?
Yeah.
Like, they weren't going to fight, you know, a beachhead or something like that. I mean, there was some Antioch fights, like, against a fortified position is super interesting. So those exist. But, like, these were all very open battlefields with low, slight grades of elevation. So you're not even really worried about hills most of the time. But that's probably my only complaint with this particular entry into Men of Iron, is just how the battles start already deployed against each other.
Yeah.
But
there's, what, seven battles in there total?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
So, and again, there's plenty of those in the tri-pack. But like you said, with the tri-pack, because it's lit three times as much stuff. Actually, it's more than three times as much stuff, because it has the extra things like Agincourt and stuff like that in it. You just get way more variety. And then you get the battles that I think are a little bit more interesting to deploy and start off on. What about you? Anything else? No. Or any complaints from you?
It's easy to pick up. I mean, I taught my daughter how to play. And, you know, within, you know, I probably explained it for 10, 15 minutes. And then we jumped right into it and she beat me. So, I mean, it's not hard to pick up. But it's also, it's certainly not just random finding out what happens. You get to make really interesting decisions. Yep. And I know I started with this, but my ultimate summary of this is watching the game go from street lines to chaos and making decisions based on that chaos. That's the best part about this game.
Yep. I would agree with you. I think this plays, all of these play quick. You're looking at a couple hours in the worst case scenario. Some of them will play faster, some of them may go a little bit longer. So it's fast playing, it's easy to pick up, and it's just a lot of fun. It is a very fun tactical medieval war game, another solid entry into Men of Iron.
Agreed.
I found a book on the Normans and I was like, oh, I'll read that, but I just didn't get to it. So I don't actually have any recommended reading.
I don't either, really. I mean, obviously, all the Dan Jones stuff is good, but it's really more of a big picture. It's not talking about specific battles, so I have nothing to talk about the specific battles.
Just the one. They just had the one.
Is it just the one?
It's in a weird spot. I know exactly what you're talking about, because it's like, in a battle. It was a weird spot, because I was like, oh, what's the bibliography for this? I'm like, I am surprised there's not a bibliography. And then when I got to whatever battle it's tucked away in, it's like, oh, there's the bibliography. Maybe, and that's what I thought too. Yeah. I was like, oh, they have sources for every battle, but it's not. It's not. It's for all of them. So, yeah, solid. Okay, any other thoughts before we rank this?
No, let's throw it on there. Let's see where it is, I should say.
Folks, we have a list of every war game ever made, ranked from best to worst. And last month, we crowned a new best war game of all time. That was Republic of Rome. But here's how it works. Rich and I, we get some clay, get a little damp, a little moist, a little wet. I actually don't know how wet you have to get clay or anything like that. But we fire up the wheel. We stick our hands out there. And Rich and I merely shape and mold this list. And we let the clay guide us, much like working with marble. Just guides us to the answer. So I have a ceiling. I have an obvious ceiling.
Ceiling's got to be the tri-pack, right?
Yeah, 39? Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Then, I don't know how low you want to go. I'm not thinking like crazy. I'm thinking like maybe below Flying Colors.
You think so, huh?
Yeah, around that spot. I mean, that's not that big a gap.
No, it's not, but I like this one better than Flying Colors.
Okay, I could be talked into a little bit higher than that. Like, I could go above Reds. I don't know if I'd go above Wilderness War. I know Wilderness War and you aren't.
No, we're not that close.
you haven't texted Wilderness War.
But right above Wilderness War is Brotherhood and Unity, which I'm surprised at how much fun I found that game to be. So I'd probably go below Brotherhood and Unity.
My audio went out there for a second. You're surprised at what?
Oh, just how much fun I had playing Brotherhood and Unity.
But this is tons of fun,
every time
too.
I look back on that game, it's just the fun factor's through the roof on that one.
Ooh, okay. Do they have the same flaw? Because the fun factor for Men of Iron for me is through the roof as well. I know our good buddy Patrick, the best office administrator in the world, loves to talk about how good Men of Iron is. I agree. It's amazing. It's not this incredibly deep and rewarding and thoughtful exercise. It's dice chucking medieval combat, and it's great at that. But remember, Brotherhood and Unity, a lot of the cards felt samey. Remember?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
So, I mean, they're different, but these have similar one issue, right? I don't know. I would put this maybe above Brotherhood and Unity, not if, above All Bridges Burning.
Yeah, I mean, if sameness is the qualifier, then this one is less samey than Brotherhood and Unity, like I said, mm-hmm. because those continuation rules are going to screw
change
up the plans.
Every battle. You're 100% right. I could not agree more. So above Brotherhood and Unity?
Yeah, I could go there.
Okay.
So new 46.
Perfect. As I type that in, I don't... Yeah, I mean, Wilderness War is right there, but I'm fine with this.
Zeppelin Raider is now number 79. Continuing its journey toward 100.
Getting there. All right, Rich. That means we've ranked. No, Zeppelin Raider is at 78.
Oh, did you already add it in there?
I must have already hit enter.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So 78.
How many more to go?
Well, next month, Zeppelin Raider will be at 81 then. So, well, I mean, we got the two next month. But other than that, I guess we could do 78 more. Or we could just rank everything that either of us owns.
Oh, I thought before it was every war game we both owned.
Yeah.
Like, we both had to... Because you said either of us.
No, I think it's either of us. So, yeah, that means I have to buy all the games that you own, and you have to buy all the games
that I own. Oh, yeah, okay. Wait, but what? It's both. Okay. We have a long way to go, folks. We're not going anywhere, but I'll tell you where we're going next month. Here's how it works. We sent out a little poll. Our patrons get to log in and vote. They voted this month.
I heard it was some crazy voting this month.
You know what? We almost had a three-way tie.
Wow.
We did not have a three-way tie. But in third place, we've never really done this before, and I'll let you announce the winner because it was a big upset, in my opinion. Third place was Space Empires 4X, which I was kind of pulling for as an underdog. I've been itching to get back to it, both on BGA. I was going to try to get an in-person game going, all that stuff. It got third.
That surprises me. It surprises me that was that high, actually. Second place, I thought was going to win.
I thought was going to win, too, which was my pick for the month. And that was Rebel Fury. I was going to ride the hot wave and my own hot-bloodedness, and that was Rebel Fury. It got second. Both of those lost to, drumroll,
first place, patron pick of April, Prelude to Revolution, Russia's Descent into Anarchy, 1905 to 1917. People are just begging for us to play some early 20th century Russian action.
Not only that, but they're begging us to play Compass War Games.
Yeah, I know. What is up with that? They're sick of us bad-mouthing them. Like, you're going to play Compass Games until you say something nice about them.
I guess so. So our good buddy Don, I know, did some development and playtest of this game. I'm excited to...
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Definitely playtest. I don't know if I should say... I'll have to check the credits, actually.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting-looking game. It's very much about tracking different tracking tracks. And that's, like, if you look at the map, it's a bunch of different tracks and scales. And it should be fun. I've been wanting to play this. And, of course, the game we keep kicking down the road, which I finally... started to massage the rule book, which I actually think is a really nice rule book, which is saying a lot for Compass. That's NATO, the Cold War Goes Hot. We will finally get that one done in April as well. And that's a big one.
Nice.
Very good. Folks, you can go to patreon.com/historytable if you want to join the vote. In the meantime, Rich, we have some listener mail, buddy.
Awesome. I want to hear it.
All right. We have a good one from Art.
Art, it's been always a while. With the MFKs.
Yeah. Mary Boink Kill. I understand that Boink doesn't start with an F. All right, Mary Fuck or Kill, and I love this. It's our top three games. Mary Boink Kill, Republic of Rome, U.S. Civil War, and Pacific War. You want to go first or you want to go second?
Are we doing, we both can do Mary? Or are we going to go through it? How are we going to
do it? Yeah, we can do that. Sure, why not?
All right.
Mary?
Yeah, I'm going to marry the Pacific War. Pacific War is a lifetime game.
Wow. I feel like I'm not going to be happy when the time this conversation is done.
Yep, because I got a hot one-night stand with the Republic of Rome coming up.
I'm going to marry the U.S. Civil War.
I figured you would.
I've been married to it for the last 5 years of this podcast. Why should anything change now? It's still like they're hand in hand. It's, I could say it's my favorite game, and then I'd just say the same thing about the Republic of Rome. Like,
yeah.
And if so, it was just a random Saturday, I'd play U.S. Civil War. So if it's a random Saturday, I'm hanging out with my wife.
Yeah. So once a year, I'm going to go away to a quiet little cabin, and I'm going to spend a day with the Republic of Rome. Yeah, if that's not enough, I don't know what else is.
You nailed it. Yeah, we're in agreement here, Republic of Rome. You're going to kill the U.S. Civil War, Rich.
I don't want to, but it's Art's rules, not mine. You don't want to kill Pacific War either, but what are you going to do?
Well, actually, it's kind of an easy choice for me to kill Pacific War, because here's the deal with Pacific War. I love the U.S. Civil War. I enjoy it. Pacific War is so much work. Like, I am fighting tooth and nail, and for me to get that game grokked.
Yeah.
And even then, I don't have it grokked. Like, I've spent so much time
Nimitz,
with that game.
Nimitz, man. Nimitz didn't have it easy. Biggest battlefield in the history of the world.
You just kind of, like, put a really nice bow on that. I've never really thought about before. I know we've talked about, like, what mindset are we in when we're playing a game, and wow, Rich, that's kind of like, that's brilliant. And it just feels like work. That's why I have to kill it.
Yeah.
I mean, just like, it is, without a doubt, one of the best games I've ever played. I love it. I love my time with it. But man, am I just like brain dead after a prep session.
Yeah.
Let alone playing the game. Like, all right, need to brush up, dust off Pacific War.
Oh, are you still playing with Paul and whoever else?
No, I wish, because my Wednesday nights don't work anymore.
Yeah.
And so it's just, there's no way I can do it. And so we played on Wednesday nights, and oh man, it was so amazing. And it would be a painful kill. I would feel some regret. But I'm going to take the easy route. All right.
I'll just take a picture of Civil War passed out and send it on and say I killed it. And secretly let it get away.
That, nice. Yeah. Draw an X over its eyes. Yeah. All right, she's gone. All right. The doc. Doc Don asks us, given the ever-increasing number
question.
Of games being published, do you think that people, including ourselves, no longer play a game enough times or give it enough time to truly understand, slash appreciate, slash master it before moving on to the next shiny new game? And do you think that series games, for example, Living Campaign, Blind Swords, Next War, help to combat this issue? There's a lot to unpack here.
There is. And yes, I agree with him 100%.
About the series games?
No, actually, the series, the second part of it, I never really thought of it that way, but I guess that kind of helps. But just,
sure,
you know, the whole cult of the new thing. And yeah, I mean, I would prefer to play some of these games more.
Mm-hmm.
And I can sit here. I'll blame the listeners. They're the ones telling me to play a new game every month. but seriously, I mean, there are certain games that I don't want to put away, you know, like I think it was 2 years ago now when I had my Pacific War binge, but I kept that up for 6 months just cause I could not take it off the table.
Right.
And it was really hard for me to take Downfall off the table. I ended up doing it just because I needed to play some other stuff, but I would have preferred to play that one a lot longer. So I agree.
Here's the deal. One, to master any of these, yes. And something like GCACW, playing all of those games, just having a bunch of different ones to tackle, Blind Swords, I think is a good example. Yeah, I think to truly master it, but I've never, ever held myself out for any of these games as a master or particularly good at anything. And so, yeah, people, there's no doubt a trend in all hobbies for the cult of the new, something exciting, unless you're talking like a nostalgic, like retro video game hobby or something like that, right? People want to play the new shiny thing, and that's fine. You're giving up the opportunity to like truly master something. Now, if time wasn't an option and space wasn't an option, I'd be right there with you. Plantagenet would still be up. And if Plantagenet was on Rally the Troops, I'd have as many games as I could handle going right now.
Absolutely.
And that's because the opportunity cost of getting Plantagenet tabled would be a lot easier then. I have always been very much a person who wants to experience and explore different things. I don't get tired of things. I don't get worn out on things. But when I feel like I have understood and appreciated things, I want to understand and appreciate the next thing. And so that part of the question, I think it just depends. I feel like I do spend enough time with the games we play, the games we feature, to truly understand and appreciate them. Let's talk about something like Battle Mackinac Island, right? Like, we didn't do a deep dive or anything like that. I didn't even remember talking about it last month. I'll gladly admit I haven't spent enough time with Battle Mackinac Island to truly understand and appreciate that game. If I haven't played something enough for our show, I'll say it. I've always said I've never spent enough time with Empire of the Sun because I've never felt like I've done it the justice that it deserves. But there's no magic number, right? That this comes up all the time when people talk about Dice Tower or whatever. And I think that Tom Vassell has always had the perfect response. And that's when people ask, how many times do you play a game before you review it? And he's always said enough. Now, the personal want to play a game more is almost always there. There's sometimes we play a game where it's like, I'm done with this one. I don't ever really need to come back with it. But I always try to play it enough to understand and appreciate it, not to master it. And it's always what I feel is enough. Now, there's lots of different people out there making lots of different content. And sometimes it's abundantly clear that they have only played the game for like 2 hours. And even that, I think, is fine. You just need to have that mindset when you're watching or consuming their content, whether it's us, whether it's Player Aid, whether it's Aardwolf, whether it's someone else, whether it's Dice Tower, I don't care who it is. You just need to have in the mindset, like, how much time did they spend with it? And just, like, that should frame your decision. You shouldn't take everything we say as gospel. You know, like you said, you're going to have a busy month next month. You know, that, like, factors in how much you understand and appreciate a game, but that doesn't mean, like, it's impossible for you to understand it. So, and this seems like I'm being defensive or anything like that. I'm just trying to, explain that. In a perfect world, I'd spend as much time as I wanted to with every game that comes up. It's just not what I'm particularly interested in, to play the same thing for a year or anything like that. I would love to spend more time with Next War. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
But it's just not there. And also my own personal interests, like, I want to see more stuff.
Yeah, I think you read this question a little differently than I did. I think you read it more as a reviewer, and I read it more as just a gamer.
Fair.
It's a slightly different angle to it, but as a gamer especially, yes, I'm very much with you in that I'm always looking at new games thinking, that'd be cool, that looks awesome. You know, I see people on Facebook or Discord or wherever posting pictures of games. I'm like, that looks awesome, I want to play that. But often, even when I'm putting a game away and I know that it's not going to be back out for a while, I'm thinking, you know, I wish I had more time to play this a little more so that I could understand the nuances and the strategy of it better.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. And I think your framing of it is actually very important, because, and Don asks that the right way. It's for all people, which means all people, different walks of life. And that's not a bad thing. If you've played, you know, half a turn of Maria, no one's knocking you for only playing a half a turn of Maria or anything like that. It is just the tendency of this hobby, good or bad, to move on to the next thing. And not everyone has the luxury to, like, devote a year to the study of Next War. Yeah, sure, it'd be really cool. Nor does everyone have the interest or the patience to do that. And I think that's perfectly fine. I would love to be, like, an expert at a game. But I just know my personality and what I enjoy. I want to play it all. I want to see it all. So I didn't mean to, like, come across as defensive or take offense to Don's question at all. I just wanted to explain, like, my perspective, how I've always seen how we handle it. And then just me as a gamer, like you said, is always like, oh yeah, I want to see it all. But then there's lots of games that I bet I have played Lost Cities, I don't know, I don't want to say a ridiculous number, but it's probably over 500 times. Like, full, complete games of Lost Cities, you know? Like, yeah, that, but that's a game I can do that with. I would love to do that. You know, we had Crunk, join the Discord. He's popped in before, and he's mentioned, like, he is looking for a collection of, like, no more than 50 games or 20 games. I don't even remember what his number was, of games that he's going to play upwards of 50 times. That's insane, and I envy that, but also I don't know if I would personally enjoy that, if I'm being really honest.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, there's always going to be something new that's coming out that I can't say no to. I've limited my game purchasing in the last year or so and tried to focus more on what I have, but there's never going to be a time when I'm done buying games.
So just on BGA, I've played Lost Cities 319 times. And that isn't, obviously, that, like, my wife and I have played that hundreds of times as well. Like, it's one of our favorite games. So, anyways, I'm not bragging about that, but, like, having that kind of having that kind of interaction with a game is really awesome. That'd be wild to do that with Pacific War or, shit, ASL, right? Like, to be a master of ASL a master of Last 100 Yards, there's the game I would do it in. If I had the time, I would dedicate more time to Last 100 Yards and be a master of that. But I understand and appreciate the design choices in that game with my handful of plays.
Yeah. Yeah, when I retire, I'll be one of those guys that plays a whole lot more ASL, that, you know, hits two or three tournaments a year and that kind of thing. I can't do that right now, but
those days will come. Right. Yeah, for sure. I think it's a good and interesting question. And I don't think anyone's in the wrong for how they look. This is a hobby. We play these games for an escape. There's no wrong way about going out this. I don't think that's what Don was saying at all. But I do like the series game for that exact reason. Now, there's a huge shift between Plantagenet and Nevsky, and we've talked about that. But just having the play experience of Levy and Campaign, or even Coin or whatever, I think it does lend itself to getting good and really understanding those games. And the more plays reward you by giving you a deeper understanding and appreciation of those systems. So, great question, Don. All right, Patrick, let's have a little fun now. Patrick asks, what are we most looking forward to for the remainder of the year? Did we do a most anticipate this year? I don't think we did.
I don't know. We did.
Speaking of cold of the new, it's just yeah, it completely slipped my mind.
I mean, but for me, it's not going to be anything new. I mean, like, if I'm looking at my pre-orders, I can tell you things that I can't wait till they come. But there's nothing. Right. You know, you never know when they're going to come anyway. Thunderbolt is toward the top of the list that. Hopefully it'll come this year, but I don't know. But for me, the things I'm looking forward to the most, I mean, I've got Donkey Kong in a month, so I'll get to play GTS for a weekend. That'll be awesome. I'm going to play some Hassel later this year, which is, you know, probably like my number one sort of gaming goal for the year. So I'm going to start that up probably in May after Donkey Kong. So those would be the things that I'm looking forward to the most. And neither of those are a new game.
Yeah. I like that. One of the things I'm looking forward to most is a new game, but it's a game that's already in my position, already come out, and that's diving into Winner's Victory. I've hyped up this game so much. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. I've not sat down with it because when I sit down, I know I'm going balls deep, and I want to glue myself to the table and take the time to enjoy it. I don't want to like do a half-assed setup and kind of like struggle through getting to that game, and I can't wait for that. When I said 2024 is going to be the year of U.S. Civil War gaming again, I'm really optimistic for that. I'm playing Line of Battle this week, which will be amazing, or this upcoming week. It may have already played by the time this episode drops. Rebel Fury, those types of things. So I'm very much looking forward to getting back to some Civil War gaming. I have GCHCW coming up this week as well. So lots of good things to look forward to. So I guess I would wrap that all up in a neat bundle and say, particularly I'm looking forward to good old Civil War gaming this year and whatever else awaits us.
Probably later this year, I'm going to teach my daughter the U.S. Civil War. I'm really looking forward to that too.
Too bad it's dead because you killed it, Richard.
It's over there with one eye open going, can I get up yet? is Art gone?
Is the mean man gone? Okay. Now, let's take all those games, this is why we never appreciate them, because at the end of every month we sweep them off the table and treat them like trash and say, get right off into it, the get trash. Out of here.
And dog is chewing on the corner on the components right now.
That's right. It's time when we talk about all the other stuff that we enjoy, that we're enjoying, having a good time with. Anything goes. It can be train games, books, RPGs, whatever. I have something I'm interested in talking about, but I'll throw it to you first. Anything you want to talk about this month?
So, I know, I'm pretty sure I've talked to you about this in the past, but have you seen the new Flanagan show yet, House of Usher?
I have not. Because okay. We don't have
Okay. Netflix. We're like 6 episodes into it right now, and we don't, okay, for obvious reasons, we don't want my youngest daughter to see it. So it's me and my wife and my oldest daughter. And we're like trying to find a time that the three of us can stay up late and watch it after she goes to bed. So it's brutal because I'm actually like the biggest early bird in the family. So like 9 o'clock, I'm like, screw it, I'm going to bed. But we're trying to find a time to watch his last 2 episodes. But so far, it's pretty fucking fantastic.
You know, my turnoff was that it was Edgar Allan Poe, and I have no problem with Edgar
Allan
Poe.
Okay, so it's not. It's a Flanagan show that's full of Poe references.
Okay, and will I lose some of my enjoyment by not getting those Poe references?
Not at all. Those are just a bonus. Yeah. I mean, there are episodes where, like if you know the name of the episode, you can kind of guess what's going to happen because you know the Poe story.
Okay.
But, yeah, no. It's just full of Poe references.
I've read a lot of Poe. I have no problem with Poe. It's just Poe, I guess I do have a personal problem with Poe, is that it was one of those things for me, being a millennial. I don't know if your education looked like this or not, but Edgar Allan Poe was like force-fed down our throats.
Really?
In language arts or literature class. And so I feel like from 7th grade on, there was always some kind of Edgar Allan Poe shit going on.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever did anything with Poe in school, but okay, my mom is a big fan, so I read it all when I was a teenager.
Yeah, I just feel like so much Poe was forced down my throat that it's just... it's not like repulsion like Nathaniel Hawthorne or something like that was also you know, shoved down my throat, but it's just kind of those things like burn out a little bit. But I like appreciate so much of it, and I love the creepy vibes and all that stuff. I will use that to segue into something I've been really enjoying. My wife and I have just read a shit ton over the last month, which is one of the reasons why I haven't tabled a lot of things. But
give me some good stuff, because my wife and I just finished up Silmarillion today. We're going to pick something new.
So the bad news is the first book I'm going to talk about, I don't think can be read by audiobook, although maybe someone chimed in on Discord and said that there was an audiobook. Did Abundant Choice say there was an audiobook? No, Ross said audiobook does exist and doesn't work super well since there's like screenshots. I read Night Film. And so what I've done over the last month is tried to capture particularly season 1 of True Detective. And I really want to watch the new season of True Detective.
I've only seen the first season.
Hey guys, we're about to talk very broad, general, light spoilers for season 1 of True Detective. If you don't want to hear those, skip forward about a minute and a half. Okay, so
what,
I
love...
Are
they up to 3 now?
There's a new 4th one, which supposedly is fantastic. And 2 and 3 are great, but they're completely different vibes.
Yeah.
One, for people who don't know, season 1 has this very creepy undertones of some eldritch horror, some hints at things like, oh my gosh, the King in Yellow, Nyarlathotep, Hastur, not Nyarlathotep, Hastur, things like that. It's not explicit throughout the whole thing. There's no like monsters or things like that. I guess I should have said spoilers. But strong overtones, undertones, whatever. And I love that creepy vibe. So I wanted books that have creepy vibes. And the one that has hit it best is Night Film by Marisha Pessl.
So this is a book or a show?
This was a book.
Okay.
And it was kind of like that first season of True Detective, and also a little bit like... oh shit! What's the Leonardo DiCaprio movie where you're like in people's heads?
Oh, Inception.
Inception. It's a little bit like Inception meets season 1 of True Detective.
It's called Night Film.
Night Film. right, and there is an audiobook, and I assume they describe like the screenshots from computers. There's like probably like 50 images in the book. They're enhancements. It's not like a clue you have to like manipulate or anything like that. I really, really liked it, like 5 out of 5.
Excellent. I think that'll be our next one then. I need something.
So an audiobook I really enjoyed, just real quick, was Laird Barron writes creepy mystery novels with kind of Cthulhu-esque backgrounds. He wrote a book called Man with No Name. I think I've talked about it on the podcast before. He also writes a series called Isaiah.
That was an old movie about a guy joining an Indian tribe.
What?
That was the Man with No Name. It was an old movie from like the 70s about a guy joining an Indian tribe. And that was the name of the movie. It was
oh, okay. This Man with No Name by Laird Barron was about a guy who had to kidnap an old, a retired wrestler, like WWE wrestler, yeah. Except it's in Japan. So it's got Yakuza and stuff going on, but then it takes this really bizarre twist. So he has a series called Isaiah Coleridge. I did the audiobook for that. And that is very much, I would say, season 2 vibes of True Detective, which is the Vince Vaughn series season. Okay. I really liked it. It's very much just like a mob enforcer who becomes a private eye. I just like it was engrossing, really good audio narration, really liked it. Didn't quite hit the season 1 vibes, but I did like it.
Oh, you know what? That movie, I think it was called A Man Called Horse.
Okay, I was going to say The Man with No Name is The Man with No Name trilogy. That's Clint Eastwood, but this is unrelated to Clint Eastwood. So I wholeheartedly recommend both of those books, Night Film and the Blood Standard is the first one in the Isaiah Coleridge. It's a 3-part series, and I like Laird Barron. Laird Barron's writing and writes about weird stuff. It's cool.
All right. Well, I'm going to check out Night Film.
Okay, good. Hopefully I didn't oversell. And then I'm working through some other stuff that some other members on the Discord have recommended that kind of get close to scratching that season 1 vibe of True Detective. Anything else you want to talk about this month, buddy?
No, I don't think so.
Cool.
I think we got it covered.
I think I am set as well.
Everyone was really happy to have Rex on last month. That was good stuff.
Yeah, it was fun. Maybe we can find another game and do a kind of similar thing. If we find an expert or a master of a particular game like Rex with Republic of Rome, it'd be cool to bring him in, that type of thing. It was fun. It was a nightmare to edit. It wasn't that bad. It was much longer to edit that process. But it was.
Yeah, we used a different recording system and everything. So
yeah, which actually the different recording system actually kind of like that was what made it manageable for sure.
Yeah.
But anyways, okay. Well, that will do it for us, folks. We will see you next month. And if you want to interact with us, just Discord.
Yeah.
Discord. I hardly check the social media stuff anymore. Burnout, I'm sure. But always on Discord. Good place to find us.
Yeah. We should throw these questions on Discord too, get everyone else's opinions.
Look at you. It was brilliant.
Look at me.
We will. Once the podcast is live, I'll make a note of that and we will do that. In the meantime, folks, that is gonna do it for us.
Good night, everyone.